This is the PropTech VC Podcast. We give you unique insights into how innovative technologies are disrupting real estate. We interview top entrepreneurs, investors, and knowledgeable experts to share the inside scoop in this fast-moving industry. It's hosted by leading PropTech VC, Zane Jaffer. Let's dive into today's content.
Today, we're here with Evan Goldin, the founder and CEO of Parkade, an awesome PropTech startup that's modernizing tenant parking throughout buildings, apartments, condos, you name it. Evan, welcome.
Thanks.
You've got a pretty cool story in terms of how you came up with the idea for Parkade, and we actually encountered each other in another life. And, I'll let you tell the story, actually.
We have origins from, well, I don't know if 7 years ago counts as long ago, but you know, long ago, at least in the last decade. But I was the first product manager at Lyft, and I've always been really interested in transportation. I've thought a lot about parking, and Zane, you were one of our earliest champions. I remember your name, you know, clearly from the early days of wondering how it was that someone could take 12 rides in a day, and seeing your name pop up repeatedly. So it's great to chat with you again. And I was working at Lyft, and we moved to this big new corporate office in the Mission in 2014. And all of a sudden, we had this dilemma that most companies in America face of we had a bunch of on-site parking spaces, and we had to figure out what the heck to do with them. And so we, in the beginning, did the same thing that most companies do. And we just said, we don't know what to do with them. I don't know. People, employees, you can park there. Have fun. We're not going to get involved in anything more than that. And the lot very quickly became overrun. We had 55 parking spaces for about 250 employees. We had a pretty young employee base, pretty urban. So that wasn't a problem initially, but very quickly became a problem because all these people started driving that didn't used to drive to work. The people that lived half a mile from the office and were tired of dealing with street sweeping or getting their cars broken into, they decided to drive to work. And so very quickly, we had too many people driving, not enough parking spaces. And I went to our CEO, Logan, and pitched him on letting me do an experiment with the parking lot, where I converted our parking lot from the typical free first come first served lot to a paid reserved parking lot. So our own employees were paying and essentially leasing spaces from us on a monthly basis. And then I paired that with this kind of push for them to reshare their parking spot when they weren't using it. So if you were on vacation, if you were sick, if you were on a sales call or whatever, if you weren't coming to the office today with that car that you'd rented a spot for, we made it pretty clear you needed to share it with the company. And you could get paid for that. You could get your money back. So if you paid the $175 a month for a spot, you could ask for $9 for a day. And I just saw our parking lot transform and how it was used. And I saw a lot of those people that didn't need to drive to work stop driving to work. And it just totally transformed how people got to work. And one of the best parts about that was we also had this huge revenue stream all of a sudden, right? We had $175 times 55 spots. We had a good amount of money coming in that we then handed out to people that didn't drive. So there was not only a reason not to drive because you had to pay for parking, but there was really an incentive to do that as well, because you got a nice little cash out of about $75 a month that you would only earn if you didn't lease a parking spot. So super successful parking experiment that really transformed commuting at the company and enabled us to scale from 250 employees in that one office to more than, I think I'd left by then, but I think about 700 employees by the time we left that office. Whereas most companies, or many companies at least, they move offices because they run out of parking. For us, that wasn't an issue. We were always able to say, we have a spot if you need it, you just might have to pay for it. So that's kind of the origins of the company. And we've really kind of taken this and applied it to multifamily residential. So that's kind of where we're at today.
Were you able to convince Lyft to pivot their entire business to optimize?
Luckily, no. Luckily, they stayed pretty focused on ride sharing and obviously have, you know, had a super, they've done okay. So I think that was a good shift. But for me personally, I was just fascinated by how we solved this problem and really wanted to kind of devote my life to it. So I started Parkade about 2.5 years ago at this point, to really try to solve this problem full-time for offices and multifamily residential buildings.
You're in a very unique situation because you had deep domain expertise because you're dealing with consumer-facing experiences at Lyft.
Right.
You're dealing with hypergrowth and you have a platform to test things on. How did you go from having that idea to eventually leaving Lyft and starting your own company? And Lyft is a rocket ship, you know? I mean, Lyft, I think, started around the same time I started my company. And both car companies grew fast, but Lyft has been another, you know, crazy story, you know, with its
right.
public IPO and it's you know, in a good place. So how did you go from Lyft to, you know, going out on yourself and building a startup?
Yeah. And I mean, there were a few steps in between. I actually went to Chariot, which got acquired by Ford, and ran their product and design teams for a couple of years, and really picked up some management experience first. I don't think I would have in 2015 been equipped to start this. I learned some skills along the way that I really needed. And then I decided to pursue this full time, left my job at Chariot to do this. And in the beginning, it was, you know, just a lot of conversations. It was, you know, user research. It was going out and talking to buildings. It's asking them, would they use this? Trying to size the market, figure out, and spending a lot of time looking and seeing if anyone else was going to take the approach to this that I am. And the answer I got was no. The answer I got was, there's no one doing this today. Tenant parking is managed with spreadsheets and email in most buildings, if at all. And certainly on the office side, it's often not managed at all. It's often, you know, a big open parking lot that anyone can just drive into. So spent a lot of time kind of talking to people and trying to put a team together. And by the time, you know, I left Chariot, I had confidence that there was a need for this. I had confidence that no one else was going to do this. And I had the startings of a team. I had my co-founder, Ben Plowman, and was able to convince him to leave his job full time and help me build a prototype of this. And so the first few months after that was just us doing the last 2.5 years have just been us kind of experimenting constantly and figuring out what we need to build.
So you stewed on this idea for a while, and eventually you had it. Were there times where you sort of wish you'd started earlier? Did you almost do it earlier? Or do you think it all came together at the right pace? Or do you wish you'd started earlier?
No, I think we started at the right time. You know, I think had we started earlier, we might have, you know, totally focused on an office parking product. And then come March 2020, you know, we might have had, you know, a dozen salespeople and all of a sudden have revenues drop to zero. I think we started at the perfect time because we were early enough on that we were still throwing everything at the wall and really seeing what stuck. And when COVID hit, we were in a great position of really at that point trying to decide, do we go after residential or do we go after office right now? And COVID, you know, somewhat thankfully made that decision for us. And I think in the long run is going to be a great thing for our business. Obviously, there's been terrible side effects of COVID, and I wish, you know, we weren't facing a pandemic, but it has really, you know, very quickly pushed technology forward in a lot of real estate, in a lot of the properties that we talk to, and gotten people to do things via technology that they were never comfortable doing, you know, just two years ago. So I think in the end, I think we started this at the perfect time, and COVID kind of falling when it did really got us to, you know, make the decision to focus on multifamily residential right now and kind of keep our aspirations for office parking for, you know, months to years down the road if and when, you know, we really see offices kind of return in full force.
You know, you raise a very interesting point there. You may think that if a startup has funding and they're off to the races and something like the pandemic happens, great, now they can go and pounce on this opportunity. Absolutely not true at all. I think most people don't realize once you set in motion in one area and you invest product resources and you hire a specialized team, it is extremely distracting and time consuming to pivot out. And the startups that survived through COVID are the ones that were fast. They were able to pivot out of the current situation and, you know, reposition the company, rebuild the product and start moving. And you know, you think about it. We're not even talking about large, massive companies that have inertia and too slow. We're talking about startups here that have raised a round of venture funding. I mean, just the process of, I've got investors, I have to go talk to the board now. We have to have a meeting. We've got to talk to our sales team. We've got to talk to the product team. That slows you down. And when you don't have that burden, and it's just you and a small, lean team of co-founders, that's when you can really emerge a phoenix rising from the ashes, really.
Yeah, it's hard to do that well. I mean, actually, I think, you know, a great example of a difficult but very necessary pivot was Zimride pivoting into Lyft. I mean, we had a team of more than a dozen people by the time we created Lyft, and we had salespeople devoted to our current business. And I remember having really hard, painful conversations in the very early days of Lyft, where our salespeople were, you know, they'd been promising their clients that our tech team was going to deliver these new features. And all of a sudden, our tech team was working on the Lyft product. And we were seeing that growing like crazy. It was really hard to, you know, talk to our sales team and tell them, I'm sorry, you're going to have to go back to your client and tell them we can't deliver because we're focused on this new, you know, short distance ride sharing thing that like is sounds like a crazy idea to them. So it's a difficult proposition. And had we, you know, been even more invested in Zimride, had we been a team of 20 to 30 that was totally invested in that product, I don't know if we would have been able to make the pitch, but I think, or the pivot, but I think, you know, the most successful startups are, you know, they're not, they don't fall into the sunk cost fallacy. They don't, you know, they think openly about what they want to do.
I mean, here's more of an extreme example. One of my good friends who worked with me for a while, Wayne Chan, he is one of the co-founders of Kabam. Kabam was doing something very different. Kabam was a gaming company back in the days. And he basically created a secret side team, built out a passion project that turned into the biggest blockbuster game for the company.
Right.
And, you know, the whole company pivoted.
Yeah.
Now, many of our listeners are in the traditional real estate game. Some of them are founders or CEOs of large companies, okay? Brokerage firms, banks, even large prop tech companies. What advice do you have for them when it comes to how they think about repositioning and moving forwards? Because this is how companies get disrupted.
Yeah.
Large companies have this sunk cost fallacy, and they have a core business they need to support. At the same time, they've got this new direction they want to go in. You've been a product guy. You've seen Zimride transition. Yep. Any advice you'd give for some of the listeners who meet the criteria I suggested?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's, you know, it's a harder position that you're in if you own, you know, $200 million in real estate, and all of a sudden, you know, your offices are sitting vacant and you have to, you know, figure out what to do with them. But I think a few pieces of advice. I mean, one is, you know, I think you need to be thinking decades ahead, right? You know, if the companies that were ready to embrace, you know, technological change as fast as possible are the ones that are doing better today, right? The ones that could very quickly adapt to virtual showings, or, you know, find ways to continue to attract tenants in, you know, in the COVID era. Those are the ones that are winning. And if you're already planning for those changes, if you're thinking decades ahead, if you're thinking, you know, not just how do I stay relevant next year, but how do I stay relevant 20 years from now, hopefully those are the skills that are going to translate to dealing with emergencies as they come up, to dealing with very fast moving trends. Because as we saw in the last, you know, 15 months, those trends can move really fast. And the things that you thought you could, you know, put on the back burner and take a decade to figure out, you had to figure them out in the last year. So, you know, I think being nimble and not getting sucked into that, you know, sunk cost fallacy, and you know, don't be overly excited that you signed a 5-year lease with a commercial tenant, right? You need to be thinking, that tenant could go bankrupt and they might not exist in 2 years. What will I do? How do I keep this space relevant? Can I build it in a way that it will be more future-proofed? And to actually take a parking example, a great one is, if you're building a parking garage, build it so that it's adaptable and reusable. The best example of this is so many parking garages get built with slanted, angled floors. Those cannot be repurposed for really anything else. They can't be repurposed for, you know, maybe they can be repurposed as like a ski run. But aside from that, you know, you're not gonna be able to repurpose that in office space into residential. So, but if you're thinking 10 years ahead, you can build flat and then just have your ramps on the exterior, and you future-proofed yourself at very little additional cost.